huge expanse of deep blue water dwarfs the patches of land we call Earth. The oceans, the ultimate frontier for mankind. An area that covers more than 70% of our planet. This was the challenge facing the makers of Deep Blue. This film provides a unique look behind the making of Deep Blue and an insight into the people involved.
Deep Blue is taking its audience on a journey that will start at the familiar face of the ocean, the beach. And we want to take people and say, that's just a tiny, tiny bit, and take them out further and further and further, out to the big blue, the unknown ocean, down to the deep ocean, and make them realize that, you know, our planet, you know, is a blue planet. It isn't an Earth planet.
In this film, you see the creature that the man that designed Alien got the idea from. You see the creature, and it's more extraordinary.
Specialist camera crews roam the oceans, capturing the elemental raw power of the seas to create an emotional roller coaster ride for the big screen.
We're trying to get people to realize how spectacular the ocean is, how vulnerable it is, and how important it is to, you know, care about it and try and go out and do something to look after it.
The open ocean, liquid space for thousands and thousands of miles. A big blue desert where finding anything is almost impossible.
That film was incredibly hard to make because in the open ocean, you cannot find your subjects. You have no control over where they are. And again, unlike on land you go to the waterhole, and I don't mean to demean people making films on land. They're still very difficult things to do. Filming animals is always difficult. But in the open ocean, there's no way of controlling the creatures. You never know when they're going to be there. And for me, I filmed for over 200 days and achieved absolutely nothing. I had 5 minutes of the completed film in over 200 days of filming. So trip after trip after trip, I was coming home and going, we've got nothing. And in fact, the very last year, we started to get more and more successful. Our very last trip, we filmed that sequence with the Marlin. And on the very last day, and this is after 3,000 days of filming, the very last day, we filmed that whale, the stay whale, coming in and eating the school of fish.
It's a little after 4 in the afternoon. Historically, this is about the time that the predator hour starts up in all the oceans of the world. The sun starts to dip a bit, so we still have to keep looking. We've got a lot of miles to go before we go to the mainland, anchor for the night, so we're still hopeful. Today, the switch is off.
Countless weeks of cruising the coast of Panama, with little to do except gaze at the horizon for most of the time.
Biggest challenge is that underwater it's much, much more difficult to film than above water. For example, if you want to film a lion hunting a gazelle, you can stay in your Land Rover, you can put a nice big long lens on the camera, and you can film something happening away off in the distance. If you want to film hunting, the only way to do it is to jump in the sea, to film with a camera with a wide-angle lens on it, and to get right in the middle of the action. Because water reduces visibility, reduces what the camera can see. So just from the point of view of getting the action, our teams, our cameramen, had to be absolutely in the middle of, you know, effectively an underwater lion shape.
Striped marlins are like underwater javelins hunting at 70 miles per hour through the water. To film them is a very dangerous business. But the daring and courage of the cameraman was rewarded with a very unusual visitor that no one expected. A 30-ton sei whale rising up from the deep blue to take part in the feeding frenzy gave the team a unique thrill to remember.
Oh my God, all the whales. There I am, quiet, doing a nice split between the air and the water with my little whoopee cushion underneath my camera. And I'm moving in closer and closer to the mackerel, and they started to tighten up, the shoal tightened up, and then up from the deep came the behemoth. Sei whale came up, blew up like a dirigible, and ate half the shoal right in front of my camera. And I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. And then, he came and did it again. Did I squeeze the trigger? Probably not. No, I got a little bit, but it was just awesome. And had I been literally 5 or 6 feet closer into the, I would have been in the whale's mouth. And I never thought that would happen, so Jonah and a whale is a true story. What a sight. And no, Mother, I don't get close to the big whales. Oh, my God. Oh, that was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. In all the years I've been fiddling around in the ocean, that was big time.
A few hundred miles further west, another team from Deep Blue was filming on the tropical paradise of Cocos Island. A place also known as the Treasure Isle. Cinematographer Bob Cranston was chasing after a different secret treasure from Cocos Island. Filming sharks requires a lot of experience, and Bob Cranston is one of the best underwater cinematographers in the world. He's dived among most shark species in the oceans and seems to be enjoying his work a lot. Cages are often used to film dangerous sharks in the water, but for Deep Blue, it was no good. The teams wanted to be right in the middle of the action. Meeting one shark underwater is terrifying enough for most men. But Bob was up against something else. The other name for Cocos Island, the Island of Sharks, surely must have a reason.
I think you have to be careful about sharks. You can wear shark suits that protect you. But most importantly, it's judging the behavior of the animal. I mean, to be honest, most sharks would far prefer eat something else than a person in a rubber suit. And it's knowing when to get out of the water. That's the way to deal with sharks.
Deep Blue is one of the biggest natural history documentaries ever undertaken. The producers and their teams were faced with nothing less than dealing with a film set as big as the planet. No easy task for anyone.
It's a bit like running a massive military operation. You know, I had a production team of 20. We employed 40 cameramen. We had 3,000 days in the field in 200 locations. And the pure logistics of getting all those guys and the cameras to various remote locations involves a lot of just basic organization.
Filming at the ends of the world, the polar regions, means fighting the harshest weather conditions on the planet. The weather posed a constant threat to the crews. The makers had to rely totally on the help of scientists and scientific expeditions to get the stories and access to the locations. Just getting there requires substantial resources. Everything has to be flown in piece by piece, and a base camp had to be set up to ensure survival. The Deep Blue team joined an Italian expedition in Antarctica to spend several months with them. Apart from the technical challenges of keeping the filming equipment warm and operational in temperatures far below zero, just keeping the contact with the rest of the world is not easy. The nearest civilization is over 2,000 miles away, and the logistics at the poles are very demanding.
It's all part of a very insignificant little box on a hill that that connects us back to the rest of the world.
We put a lot of work into the design of it because we sort of think of it as the equivalent of sending things off to the moon or to Mars.
With temperatures dropping down to minus 60 degrees, the conditions are hard and tiring. Emperor penguins are very inquisitive birds that have little fear of humans. They are easy to film on land, almost impossible to capture on camera underwater.
Obviously, the biggest problem about filming in polar regions is the cold. You've got to keep yourself warm, you've got to keep the gear warm. But I suppose the other massive challenge is you often end up working on the ice. I mean, everything, well, almost all the animals in polar regions feed in the sea. So you tend to spend a lot of your time at the ice edge. And the ice has this rather annoying habit of floating away. And in fact, in the making of Deep Blue, we did have one very worrying occasion when a team did actually float out to sea. And for a whole day, we were very worried the ice was going to break up before we could rescue them with a helicopter. And I think understanding the ice, understanding the changeability of polar regions is its biggest challenge of working there.
With the experience of many years spent in the polar regions, the Deep Blue teams brought home some of the most amazing moments ever filmed on penguins. Specially designed cameras allowed Doug and Martha to capture unique images of the birds under the ice. No easy task, since their behavior changes completely once in the water.
Doug, I'm recording. Okay, roll, Doug, they're coming.
In there, penguins are extremely nervous, since this is the habitat of their only predators, sea lion. And to the birds, a diver in a rubber suit looks just like a sea lion, making it impossible to film them this way. Without the pole cams, as they are called, all these magnificent shots would have been entirely unthinkable. Back in a harsher environment. This time, Doug Allen was chasing polar bears.
This is definitely not a day to go looking for bears. It's about minus 15. It's pretty nuts of wind. Wind chill, something ferocious. So I'm gonna go back in the hut.
The almighty hunters of the north are very difficult animals to film. The cinematographer has to slowly approach the bear and build up a relationship of trust. This process can take days and weeks, and constant setbacks are part of it. Step by step, they carefully get closer to the bear.
It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I think we just cracked it. We had a female there with the cub. And she did quite a lot of pouncing, about 50, 80 meters away. Just a nice sort of distance. And you know what she did when she was finished? She was so relaxed that she sat down and gathered the cub into her and suckled her head onto the camera. I'll tell you, the weight off your mind when you get something like that, it's incredible.
One of the most demanding and difficult parts in the filming of Deep Blue was the section on the real deep. Massive use of technology and big ships were necessary to get down to the bottom of the sea. More people have traveled into space than to the depths of the ocean floor. Although the deep sea is by far the largest habitat on our planet, we know so little about it. During the filming of Deep Blue, the crews traveled to places where not only humans have never been before, but where even the light of the sun has never penetrated. They were literally entering into a new, unexplored world.
176.
100 feet.
184 at 600 feet.
Their journey took them deeper and deeper, away from the light, down into the unknown. Waiting for that special moment, cinematographer Simon King experienced all the ups and downs of a wildlife filmmaker. It is one thing to see it happening, but it is something quite different to get it on film. The moment might have come, but the light is not right, or the camera is not ready. And having all the elements fall into place at once is a very rewarding, emotional experience. There was still one challenge left for the makers of Deep Blue. The biggest of all animals, the blue whale.
Mary Lee, we've just got a big blow. You ready to copy? I'm going to pass the coordinates over to you, and we've got to go take a look.
In the 3 years that we were filming Deep Blue, we discovered and saw new species on almost every dive. Well, that's really, really hard on land, you know. I mean, there's so much that we don't know about the oceans. The largest animal that's ever lived on our planet, the blue whale, we have no idea where that animal goes to breed. It's extraordinary, in my view. And that's why I think it's the last frontier scientifically. I also think for wildlife filmmakers, it's been a last frontier because it's a very, very hard place to work.
Filming blue whales should be easy, but it's not. They are bigger than the biggest dinosaurs, but finding one is extremely difficult. The key to success is spotting them from above. These fast-moving giants are quicker than most speedboats.
There's some wonderful animals out there. And it's a powerful place where man is very, very small and very, very weak. And if people can take that away and possibly eat less fish and chips in the evening, then that's good news.
A Magyar Királyság ezer éves történelme során mindig is sok szálon kötődött a német alföldhöz. A reformációt követően Erdély és Magyarország máig élő kapcsolatokat épített ki Hollandiával, a kultúra, a művészetek és az oktatás területén is. A műsor a két nép szolidaritását, a nemzetek példamutató és baráti együttműködését mutatja be. Vannak vidékek. Holland-magyar kapcsolatok. Vasárnap délután 4 óra 5 perckor a Duna Televízióban.
Nemzeti gyásznap és demonstráció dömping után. Munkatársaink helyszíni beszámolóit láthatják több budapesti és vidéki megmozdulásról. A heti hírmondó stúdiójában Varga Mihályt, a Költségvetési Bizottság fideszes elnökét és Mandúr Lászlót, az országgyűlés MSZP-s alelnökét kérdezzük arról, mi várható ezután. Szó lesz a héten benyújtott jövő évi költségvetésről és annak külföldi visszhangjáról. Heti hírmondó vasárnap este 19 órától. Tartsanak velünk!